Of course, my husband called, the cops, called 911. They rushed me to the hospital, and then afterwards, I had to go to the psychiatric hospital. But this was also my second visit at that time, so it's like you kind of knew the drill type way. You've already been through it before, so you're like, okay, well, this is just the way it is.
You're listening to Alchemical Voices, a podcast exploring the lives of BIPOC, transracial adoptees, and survivors of complex trauma. Hi, I'm Jaslyn, your host, a nurse, and trauma release practitioner, curiously observing the human experience. As a Black woman and survivor of human trafficking, I've encountered many, many hardships. On the road to recovery, I discovered that storytelling unites us at heart and is where we find healing, inspiration, and encouragement. In each episode, you'll hear stories from courageous souls, and we will touch on subjects such as identity confusion, the impacts of racism, complex trauma, transracial adoption, and much more. How do we rise amid trials and tribulations? How do we invite softness into our lives? We touch on these and many other questions, so tune in to experience transformative storytelling and let's heal together. Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another episode of Alchemical Voices. Today, I have the amazing Jennifer Woolwine in the studio.
I'm so
Welcome,
excited
Jen.
to be here. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
You're welcome. I'm just in awe of you. You know that. I've just been love bombing Jen for the past 30 minutes before we started recording. So, yeah. Jen, how are you feeling today? What's on your heart?
Definitely have nerves, but out of, I couldn't think of a better person to be dealing this with is someone who, I've just grown to adore so much, who has just been such a force in the trauma healing community for me, and I know so many others. And so I don't even know why I'm even nervous, because I'm talking to a friend, right? So it's like, and we get each other. So I know that there's not going to be no like, oh, is she going to think I'm dumb? Do I sound stupid? Because I know we struggle and constantly the self-criticism. So I'm letting that stuff go and just sitting here and chatting with my beautiful friend, Jaslyn.
Oh, thank you so
So I'm
much.
love bombing you right back.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That really warms my heart. And you know what? Even though I'm the host, I also get nervous, and I also, these insecurities, they creep in, and these inner dialogues. What if I pronounce a word wrong? What if I mix, an American pronunciation with the British? That's what it very much is for me. And so I get it. And you know what? I'm just going to embrace it. So if I say something wrong, so be it. I'm human. You're human. And what matters is that there is love and respect in this space. And there is, because we are two survivors that found each other, and here we are embarking on this beautiful journey and building a friendship. And I'm so honored. And as I said before we started recording, there are very few people that really inspire me, and you are one of them. Like I said to Jen, I go on one of her Instagram pages that I'll be linking to in the episode description. I go onto her page when I get caught up in those less positive thoughts to feel inspired as fuck and to keep going, because Jen is just so inspiring. And that's also why I invited her on the podcast, because I believe that her story is going to make a massive impact on whoever listens. Whether you have trauma or not, this woman's story is going to rock your world because she is such a badass. It's just this, you know,
Oh,
you
yeah, I
are.
really appreciate that. And I
Oh, you
just
really are.
don't
Yeah.
think of myself that way. And, you know, it's always hard when we start sharing our stories and those inner critic or thinking, well, somebody else has experienced so much more trauma than me. Or, you know, you kind of minimize your own trauma experiences. And I mean, I still do that. And I even felt like in the back of my head, just knowing, you know, some of your story and what you've been through. And it's like, how can I come on here and share some of the things that happened to me and not feel like, not like comparing, but you know what I'm saying? Like not feeling like my trauma is as severe, maybe. I don't know. And I know so many people can relate to that. And it's like, I have to kind of remind myself the same advice like I give clients, and that is your trauma is valid. It doesn't matter what you experienced. If it made left a mark on you, it made an impact, it changed you. That's what it is. And it doesn't matter how, if it's this big T trauma, you know, I always hate when they do these comparisons of like big T and little T, but you know, all of these incidents can just really add up. And I mean, you can have 100 little tiny little instances that happened that affected you and can weigh so much more heavier than one big significant trauma. So it's like I even have to remind myself, like, no, you did go through a lot. But even as you were saying that, it was like, oh, well, I don't really think it is. I don't know. I mean, I do know, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it's
I
like,
don't know, but you know I
but
do know.
yes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I think we all have those inner dialogues where one part of us is like, oh, it wasn't that bad and it's just me. And then there's another part that's like, no, it was that bad. And
Yeah.
it was. Stop gaslighting yourself because that's
I
essentially
know. Yes.
what it is. Right.
Yep.
And knowing
Yep.
your story, it also makes sense that you would have these inner dialogues where you have parts that are have opposing like views. I have
Yeah.
observed that in myself, and I observe that there is this tendency to self-gaslight, which makes sense knowing the story I have and the home I grew up
Right.
in. So I also think this tendency to do this self-gaslighting is because we've internalized something that was done so much to us, you
Yeah.
know? So now I'm not going to give anything away of your story. You're going to be the one to tell it. But yeah, I just really want to
Programming.
acknowledge you, and you're not alone in that. I
Yeah.
do that too.
Thank you.
So, my beautiful friend Jen, this is your time. Is there a specific part of your story that you would like to start, or you're the boss. You
Okay. I think I'll do a little bit, I guess, backstory in just the type of environment that I did grow up with. And it was definitely a lot of emotional abuse. I was raised by my stepdad and my mom, and my stepdad raised me from when I was one. And so I never really knew my real dad until I met him when I was 27. But all I knew from that previous relationship with my mom and my real dad was that he was an addict. He was very abusive, and she just packed up her stuff and left during the middle of the night after he dislocated her jaw. So this is what she told me my whole life, and that he was not a good person. But of course, she didn't tell me I even had a, so I might be going, jumping a little bit ahead, but she didn't tell me that my stepdad wasn't my real dad until I was 10 years old. So up until then, I thought my stepdad was my real dad. And so all this is stuff that they told me like later in life. But So thinking my stepdad was my real dad, and just living in this house of toxic dysfunction where he was king of the castle, my stepdad was, he would voice that all the time. I'm king of the castle, what I say goes. And I had two younger sisters that were 8 years younger than me, and I had a younger brother that was 5 years younger than me. So even though I have like a lot of half and step siblings, I grew up with, I guess, three of them. But me being the oldest in the household, I was definitely the parentified child, where I was kind of the mediator, the peacekeeper, the take care of my siblings so they weren't aggravating my parents, because, you know, it was just seen as like, okay, well, Jennifer, you take care of them, keep them busy, keep them out of our hair. Because anything in the household, if we were like kids being kids, playing, roughhousing, being too loud, I mean, we were screamed at for like hours, and you kind of had to like stand at attention, while my stepdad would be like in your face, like nose to nose, spitting, screaming, clenching his fist, like acting like he's gonna, you know, hit us. And then if you flinched or looked away, you know, I was constantly being accused of rolling my eyes, and so I was disrespectful. You know, they're like, you're rolling your eyes, and I'm just like, you know, how do you react? You're a kid being screamed at like, you know, a drill sergeant in a way. And my husband always says he has little man syndrome because he was sometimes like 5 foot, I don't know, like 5 or 6. Like, he's not a tall guy, you know, and my husband is 6'3". So to him, he's like, he's got little man syndrome. You know, he just demands that respect that he never gives anybody else, and takes it out on people who are smaller than him, women, you know, and just constantly demeans, belittles, makes fun of everything. And so I just grew up in this household of just thinking I am dumb, you know, that I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough. And of course, now, as you know, almost 40, now I know it's because he was a narcissist. But of course, at that time, I didn't know what that was. I just thought, like, oh, well, this is just how it is, because he liked to claim that this was just him disciplining him. And so, and it was all about respect. So, I mean, he knew how to manipulate and make us think that, you know, we brought it on ourselves, I guess. You know, oh, it's my fault, like for playing the piano when he came home from work. Like, I know better. I shouldn't have done that. And it would just like set him off. And he would be like, all you do is like plink, plink, plink on the piano. Like, you're not even that good. Like, this is a waste of money for lessons, you know? So just everything was just made fun of. And it was also hard because I was also treated way differently than my other siblings. And of course, now I know, because I wasn't his real kid, you know, but growing up, I was like, why am I always the one that's kind of like singled out? You know, just having to carry that burden of thinking like something's wrong with me, or why aren't I good enough? Why can't he love me? Why isn't he as nice to me, you know, like he is to my other siblings? But don't get me wrong, like, he definitely, you know, was very emotionally and sometimes physically abusive with them too. But it just seemed like I got a lot of the brunt of it, growing up, for sure.
Wow. Let's just take a breather. Take a deep inhale. And exhale. Wow. What came up for me while listening to this part of your story is please never tell yourself that you don't have trauma or that your trauma isn't valid, because I could feel it in my body. I had a visceral response hearing how you were treated, because it reminds me so much of how I was dehumanized. You definitely have trauma. It was not okay what happened to you. It wasn't fair. And this was a weak man that was projecting his insecurities, his feelings and as of inferiority onto you, all of you, because he could. You know, he was a bully. To put it,
Very much
to
so.
simplify it, not to undermine what he did, but to simplify it, not to say that a bully can't be horrible, but this was a bully. This was someone terrorizing you, picking on someone that was, you know, because you could. You know, pick on someone your own bloody size. Don't pick on someone that's what a coward does. That's not strength. That's not power. That's weakness. So I'm
It's
sorry that you, I'm sorry that you, that that was your first experience of the masculine, of abuse. And being degraded. So it's no wonder that you've struggled with those self-esteem things and internalized these narratives that you're dumb and all these things. It really makes sense.
I definitely struggle with a lot of body dysmorphia from it. Being on camera, I mean, this is a completely, I only started showing my face really. I mean, I would show it like on my Instagram with my animals, but my animals kind of always took the pressure off. So it was a lot different, like with my other Instagram account, just showing up with my animals and spending time with them. Well, one, they always calm me down, but I didn't feel like the spotlight was on me. But then when I started shifting into trauma recovery and creating, my other Instagram, speaking to that, I started showing my face and actually sharing my experience and didn't bring my animals in every time. And I mean, I still do it. I will film like a 5 second thing and do it 20, 30 times because I'll pick apart things. I'm like, oh, why do you look to this side? Or, you blink. One thing is my blinking. So I know this sounds so ridiculous, but I've shared it a couple of times with people. It is, I guess, because growing up with my stepdad, to where I got to the point to where I just didn't do anything to react, because if you react, you flinched, you look to the right or whatever, it just would bring on another onslaught of being screamed at. So it was like I just learned to like focus in on one thing to look like because you had to have eye contact. So you couldn't look away, like you had to be looking at him while he's screaming in your face and berating you. So I would like focus on like a spot on his face and to look like, I am keeping eye contact. But then the only thing he had left was talking about how much I blinked, and he would make fun of it, like trying to say like I had a learning disability or something. Like, why are you blinking so much? Like, you look so stupid. Like, why are you blinking? Like, you blink so much. And so it became this thing to where I hated being on my picture taking. I hated to be on any kind of like video. And so doing like Instagram and then having to finally be on camera and like sharing my story and talking, I thought it was awful. It was so hard because I was like, why am I blinking so much? Just picking apart these small things that were just so programmed and conditioned into me. And obviously I'm seeing things that nobody else is freaking noticing, but it's just that programming of thinking I look one way when obviously I don't,
And that's what
And looks
happens.
were a huge thing too.
Yeah, because we internalize it, you know. So our inner critic is often we can. Well, I'm gonna speak on my behalf. I can most definitely hear if I have this negative thought spiral. Oh, this is the woman of the house speaking now. This is where this bullshit originates. It's from her. Oh, this is from the man of the house. You know, I haven't always been able to do that, but by sitting with myself in silence and observing my
Yeah.
thoughts, I can hear that many of the m most of the times when I'm self-critical, it's not me. It's something I internalized from a former partner, former friend,
Right.
especially my childhood.
Yeah.
You know? So I applaud you for showing up on social media anyway, showing your beautiful face, because that's your way of saying fuck you to the narratives. You will not have power over me. You
Yeah.
will not control how I show up. Yeah, you may take 20 takes. So what? The most
Yeah.
important thing is that you are showing up, you know, and you're making a difference for yourself and
Yeah.
others, because the more we dare to do something, the more bold we become, and it becomes a little bit easier because we get a new experience that, oh, it's not as dangerous as I thought it was. And oh,
Right.
no one gives a fucking shit about my blinking eyes, which, by the way,
Yeah.
I've never thought about your blinking eyes, not once, you know? So it's
I
definitely
know.
it's
It just shows how something so tiny can have such an impact.
Yes. And I
We call it
get
like
it.
that brainwashing, you know, of
Yes. And
something so ridiculous.
and I get it. I am with you. I see you. I get it. And I just sometimes, you know, it has me thinking one day when I become a mother, wow, what I communicate to my children, sorry. I have to be very cautious of that, because one day that's going to become their inner critic. And they're going to ca carry these narratives throughout their life.
Yeah.
You know? So
I think
it's
that's why I've been
definitely
so
impactful.
terrified to have kids, is because I didn't. I was so terrified that I would pass on
Yeah.
all that crap that they gave me. And I was like, I'm just not going to do it. Because I was like, I
Oh.
don't know if I can not do it. You
Yeah.
know? I was so
Yeah.
terrified. I freaked
Yeah.
myself out so much over it. I just said, nope,
Yeah.
I can't do it.
I definitely get that too. I've had that fear too for the longest time, especially the fear of becoming like the man of the house. So the reason why I say woman and man of the house is because it wasn't a foster family, so the truth has come out now, and it just seems so out of, I don't even know how to put it in word. It just seems so wrong to say parents, even foster parents, because they were just complete trash the way they treated me.
Right.
It had nothing
Yeah.
to do with being a parent, so I just refused to say it. But so the man of the house, for the longest time, my biggest fear that I would become like him, because I had so many rage issues for valid reasons.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I'm just this evil, shitty human being. I can't bring children into this world because I'm just going to inflict the same pain. But no, you know what? I can only speak on my behalf, but I can feel within me that I am so passionate about not doing what any of the four
Right.
and a half, I say, caregivers they did to me. I am so determined on breaking that cycle, and I'm so determined to do better. That I
Yeah.
know now, today, I'm going to be a fucking phenomenal mother.
Yeah,
Because what
you
those
are.
morons, four and a half, actually five people told me was every way you can fuck up a human being. So I'm just going to do everything opposite of what they did. And I think
Right.
I'm going to be pretty
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. Yeah. It's
Yeah.
like with, you know, having a stepdad like that, and then having also a mom that kind of just stood by and allowed it to happen. But of course, now knowing that a lot of it was also their own trauma responses, because obviously they never dealt with their own shit, None of it, never even acknowledged it, recognized it, nothing. And, just seeing every family member, and it was like this, I mean, grandparents, aunt, uncles, now that I look back, I'm like, every single one of them has is a narcissist, like every single one. And it was like they just felt like each generation, they're like, okay, if I do one thing differently, then I'm better than my parent was, So it's like even with my mom's like trauma with sexual abuse in her family, she was like, okay, well, as long as, my kids, I don't know. It's like she would just improve things. Like, as long as it's a little bit better than what it was, how it was for me, then I am being like this doting, wonderful parent, because I love to put on also the show to people on the outside of, look how loving we are. We're the happy little Leave It to Beaver, happy family. And we all sit down and eat a meal, but, nobody saw how we couldn't speak. We were constantly being berated how we ate our food, so it's not like we were all sitting there like having this loving relationship, but to the outside it was always like, oh, look at the happy little family, the kids are so well behaved, we never have a problem out of the kids. It's because we were too terrified to do anything. We knew no, just say yes sir, no sir, like that was it. If you responded any other way, it just wasn't good. So it was like, but to them, they're just like, oh, look, we have these well-behaved kids, oh, it was just this whole act constantly and just so exhausting.
I definitely recognize that too from my own upbringing. Just the falseness of it all, the acting, putting on like this facade. I'm so grossed out by it. And even to this day, I don't like surface leveled things. I want authenticity. And I think the reason why I can have such a strong response to fakeness is because of that. I recognize what you're saying, and it's interesting to me that your mother would have this view that as long as she just did, a little bit better, then, she had like made a massive difference or like was a cycle breaker. But the fact that she chose a man like your stepfather and she had children with him, right? And she let him terrorize all of you the way he did. That's not a cycle breaker. A cycle breaker is choosing entirely differently than what you came from. We are cycle breakers. We are the example of cycle breakers. Your mom is not. That sounds more like Delulu, if I'm gonna be completely honest.
That's And she's still in that delulu, thinking that she was this wonderful mother. And I know I've shared with you like how my family is blocked on social media, but I know like they will find ways to find a podcast I've done with someone. Like, they're gonna hear this. I know they will find it, they will hear it. And even though she's gonna hear these words, obviously it's never gonna enter, like it's gonna be like, oh my God, how could she tell people this? This is not true. What is she talking about? I was the best mother, and it's all how she is perceived by people that don't even freaking know her, but she could care less, like how we see it or how it's affecting us. It's all these people who have no clue who the fuck she is. Like on my Instagram, it's like she's always like, oh my God, what are these people gonna think of me that my daughter's saying this about me? But it's people that she would never know. Like, nobody knows who you are, but it's just that facade of how they are to other people, and that like shape-shifting, whatever relationship she's into whatever that guy is into. And so like with my stepdad, it was like he was a farmer. And so to her, it was like, okay, well, then this is oh, we're going to act like we're in 1950s. I'm going to greet them at the door. I'm going to have the home cooked meal and, put on this big show. And then was so like controlling too. I mean, I know I'm like kind of going all over the place, but like in high school, I started like hanging out with older kids and like getting into the grunge style, wearing a lot of black. And then it was like, oh my God, people are going to think you're a devil worshiper. You cannot do that. Yes. Like listening to like bands like Nirvana, and it was like how could you do that? Like you're going to hell for listening to this music. Putting on this whole act of, I couldn't watch rated R movies. Like I didn't see Forrest Gump until I met my husband. They would cut out scenes in Titanic. I was 14, and they cut out the sex scene in Titanic, right? Which doesn't even show anything, but you would be watching it on a VHS, and then all of a sudden it would be black and white static. And then it would cut, afterwards, right? It was so ridiculous. But if you look at how my mom's living now, though, she's wearing all black. Her house is decorated in Halloween decor. It's Ouija boards, gargoyles. She's into like heavy metal. It's just so completely. You know what I'm saying? And it's just so hard to look back and thinking like when all that was going on, I was just like, oh, well, I have a roof over my head. I have clothes on my back. I'm not going hungry. So therefore, it's a loving childhood and that I should be grateful because a lot of it was drilled into my head that I owed my family for raising me. So having all that stuff provided was like seen as like, look at everything we've done for you. We've sacrificed so much for you. Those phrases. So thinking like, oh, I did have an okay childhood, like, and then that self-gaslighting, thinking it wasn't that bad, or it was disguised as, that was just discipline, or not realizing, of course, now seeing it was, emotional, physical, spiritual abuse, but I didn't recognize any of that, of course, until way later.
And just that sentence, the woman of the house, she would say that to me too. Jaslyn, after everything we've done for you, it's so manipulative and it's designed to guilt trip you. It is so manipulative. And I'm having like physical reaction to what you're sharing now because it's just I honestly feel like it's so cruel. It's so incredibly cruel, especially when this is done to children, because children they don't have the emotional intelligence to say, you know what, this is not my responsibility, it's yours. I'm not to blame, you are. And set that boundary. Children have this because they're children and they don't have the maturity, they internalize everything. So if mom, even let's say that no one was being abused and mom and dad chose to get divorced, children often think, was it something I did? Like if I had done something differently, would they still be together? So to put that amount of responsibility onto a child and guilt trip them and shame them to the extent that we've both experienced, it's no fucking wonder we self-gaslight and we have struggled with our self-esteem and have spent so much time rebuilding ourselves. Because and I think we spoke about this before, or we wrote about it in the comment section or in the DMs on Instagram. What makes narcissistic abuse so complex is that it slowly but surely chips away your sense of self-worth, your fucking sanity. It just chips it away slowly but surely. And before you know it, you lost yourself. You don't know who you are. You don't know what you want, what you need.
Yeah, what you
And
like, what you dislike, you have no clue. It's like starting all over. You're like, who am I when you come out of
Exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Especially with covert narcissists. I feel like with
Yeah.
my mom being like the covert, just not seeing that, it was so hard to see. Of course, now when I see it, it's like so blatantly obvious, you know, but at the time it's like, but what really affected me more? Was it being screamed at? Was it the physical abuse, or was it the manipulation of constantly realizing now that a lot of it, she was just pulling the strings, you know, she orchestrated so much of it behind the scenes. And even with like my dad, when he would get physically abusive, you know, she instigated it. She would like call him up and be like, oh my God, these kids are out of control. You've got to come home and deal with them. And so we would have to just like be waiting in line and whatever he had in his hand, basically. And it was discipline, you know, spank us or whatever. And we would like stuff like clothes, like down her clothes, you know, like our newspapers or whatever to kind of like soften the blow. But then if he noticed that, then of course you would get it, you know, really bad. But my mom also liked to sweep in, not sweep in, swoop in, when she thought it was getting out of hand. And then she would be the rescuer. Like, oh my God, like you're being too aggressive and, you know, act like she's like sheltering us from it, you know, but she instigated it. And then they would get in a fight and then we would be blamed while they were arguing. You know, it was just like so much dysfunction.
And so much confusion, I imagine, for a child, and seeing those power dynamics, that's what's coming to me when I hear you explain what unfolded, or power dynamics. So her like calling him, instigating, and then at one point, and then at another point, stepping in and being good cop, being the rescuer, the savior. Like, what are you even doing that? It's just,
Like,
my
who do you go
God.
to?
Sorry.
It's like, who do you go to? You know,
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
I don't think I ever came to my parents. Like, I mean, there'd be some things where I would like come, you know, if something happened, but there was never no like nurturing, like, let's sit down and have like a conversation. You know, there was always just some ulterior motive to it. And even now, I mean, it's still that way. I mean, I'm still like very limited contact with them. I haven't gone no contact yet, but it's very just surface level. Now I just kind of gray rock my way through it. I don't give them anything good, don't give them anything bad that's going on. Just like, yep, it's great. You know, same old, just doing barn chores, taking care of the animals. Like, that's all it is. And they're fine with that. It's like they can deal with that. But what I can't handle is long periods of conversation, them coming here. Like, it used to be so, like, holidays or whatever, I would always get the family together because that's what I was supposed to be doing. And oh, let's have Christmas together or whatever. But the whole, I hated it. And it's why, like, now I don't even like, we don't do anything for holidays now because we would just get so just couldn't do like what we were saying earlier, the fakeness. I could not be fake knowing how these people really are and then putting on this like act just to do it for a day. And then afterwards, it was like I needed days to recoup from it because it was just, I had nothing left, so exhausted. And I had to quit doing that because it would be like weeks gearing up to like Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. I would start feeling it. I would lash out at my husband constantly. He would do it back to me, just knowing, oh, we've got to do this. We know the drill type thing. To do it for what?
Yeah, exactly.
What was the point of it? Just so that my
Exactly.
parents could have this like thing of, oh, look how great of a family we have. But it
Yeah.
was so fucked up, you
Yeah.
know?
Who are we doing this for? Is it something that we want? No. Okay, why are we doing it?
Thinking we have to do it, you know, oh, this is what you're supposed to be doing. This is how it should be. But hating every fucking second of it.
Yeah, I absolutely get that. It's Especially when you struggle with boundaries, you usually end up doing things like that, doing things that you don't really want to do and doing them just to keep the peace. I used to do that a lot. I would lie constantly to my family. Just gonna be completely honest. So I would like lie and say, no, I'm working. I was working as a nurse, so I would just lie. No, I have this, I'm taking an extra shift. And then I would feel guilty. I feel like such a shitty person for lying. So I would actually end up taking extra work on that I didn't have that capacity. I didn't have the capacity to take, an extra shift. So it was like, what am I doing? Not only am I lying, I'm feeling guilty for lying, and then I'm putting myself in a position where I'm working extra just to feel better about lying. For who? What? Why not just be honest? But it's so
Easier
challenging
said than
to be
done.
honest, because then the guilt tripping starts. Then the woe is me. Why don't you prioritize us more? Why don't you want to be around your family, da 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 da, and having to explain. Now I don't give a fuck. I have no contact, but now I'd be like, I don't like you. Like, goodbye. But it's taken me a long time to get to this point. And I know that there is a part of your story. I don't know if you want to feel like going into it, but you recently posted about it on Instagram. It's regarding money. And that really broke my heart when I read what they said to you and how you were manipulated and how you were shamed and accused of being selfish. That just my gut, it just went into a ball of like pain. I don't know if you want to go a little bit more into that part of
Yeah,
the
I
abuse you
can.
experienced.
I would say most of that started right after I graduated high school. I joined the military at 17 to kind of escape that, and all it did was kind of bring me right back into it. In a way, it was like I saw the military as this way of, okay, I'm going to get away from my family, get out from under their thumb, be independent. And it's like all it did was make me feel like I had to do everything possible to help my family out. So, even I served in Iraq, and when I served over in Iraq, like when I came home, my bank account had like $3,000 in it. And I was over there for 14 months and made tax-free money at 20 years old. So I made like, I don't know, maybe 35,000 that year. I had no bills, but like a cheap ass car payment that was like 250 a month and insurance. That was like the only bills I had when I went over there. And I came home to 3,000 in my bank account because my mom had access to it. And so they just did whatever. But while I was over there, it was just like I wasn't checking my bank account. Like I didn't think I would have to worry about something like that. Just because, like, when I was 16, like I always paid for everything on my own. Like I paid my own car payments, insurance, whatever. Like I always just paid everything. So I didn't think I would have to worry about my parents spending my money and doing stuff with it. But that's what they did. But when I came home, it was just like I was so glad to be home that I didn't care. And I never even said anything about it. It was just kind of like I didn't say a thing to them about it. I just accepted it. Okay, that's what it was, and went on about it. But then I started like working for the government, and I had, a decent job. I had a house, nice cars, and they saw it as like, oh, I mean, my stepdad even said this to me. He's like, you got money falling out your ass. And it was like, no. But to them, they saw it as, well, if you can do that, then you need to help us with all of these little things. And it would just be everything was like a family crisis that only Jennifer could solve. And that was how I found my worth, was feeling like oh, they actually do love me, but really it was for what they were getting from me, which was cars. I mean, I've never really talked about this portion of it before, like in a public forum. So this is giving me a little.
You can take a breather if you need that. We can take a
No,
breather.
I'm okay. It's
Okay.
just, it makes me angry, I guess, when I start talking about it. But it's also like in the back of my mind, I'm like, should I even be saying this just because I don't want to hurt my family either? It's like, why do I still care? Ugh, but I still do in a way. But I mean, I gave like, so when I came home from Iraq, and I don't want to be like, oh, look at everything I did for my family. Like, I'm boasting or bragging about it. It's just so people can kind of see how easily you can even be financially abused by your parents and not
Absolutely.
realize it by thinking. But when I share like everything that I did, it kind of puts it in perspective, like to show that they were just using me for these things. It wasn't, I wasn't getting validated for it. I wasn't being appreciated for it. It was just an end game for them. They wanted something from me, and this is how they did it. And so just being financially abused just really took so much out of me. With I gave my brother a car when I came home from Iraq. It was paid for, and I gave it to him. Nothing. Then I bought my mom a car, and made the payments on it. Then I bought another sister a car. Every holiday, birthday, everybody got money, gifts, to the point to where they would send me a text of what they wanted. Like, no, like, hi, how are you? It's just a picture, like, this is what I want this year for whatever, my birthday, a holiday. And it was just expected, And I'm not talking like some 20, 30 like dollar thing. Like, these would be like, three, four, five, six, $700 like items. It was just so ridiculous. But it got to the point to where like I was paying like medical bills, if they were late on bills, anything. They needed school supplies. Sister wanted to join a sorority in college. My husband took out his 401k to pay for college for a sibling. It was just so much stuff that, at that time, how did I not see it? Of course, now when I look back, I'm just like, oh my God, like I was so dumb
No.
to fall for that. And thinking like, oh, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Because I still had that internal dialogue of, I owed my family for raising me, because it was so drilled into me that this is what you do. You are expected to help your family. You are expected to help your siblings. If you have the means to do it, you need to do it. But nobody else was held to that standard. My siblings never had to do the same thing. It was just me.
You were parentified from a young age, and we continue to be in we unconsciously continue to be in those roles until the moment we wake up and see, holy shit, I'm in this role. I don't want to be in this role. It's not serving me. It's toxic. It's not serving anyone, definitely not me. I'm gonna work on getting out of it. So it wasn't because you were dumb, my love. You are operating from a program, a role that you always had been in. And as you got older and got married and you got I don't know if you had financial freedom, but you definitely sounds like you had better finances than your family. That's what it, turned into. Oh, she can be a, now she can be a financial provider. And they exploited you. They knew this is how Jen is. So I know that if I send her this text with this wish, she's gonna give it to me. They knew the ins and outs of you because everyone in a family constellation, we all have a role, and they definitely knew how to work their ways around you.
Yeah. And
They
now I
took
know, like
advantage
with
of
my
you.
mom, oh, for sure. Yeah. And what's sad is like knowing now that my mom plays such a big role in that by saying, if something was coming up that it's not like my parents didn't have the money to do it. They just didn't know how to manage any kind of money and they didn't want to spend any time learning how to manage it. So it was just like, well, go visit your sister, spend some time with her, and you know that you'll leave there. She'll give you money or whatever. So, but at that time, I was like, oh, look, my siblings want to come visit me all the time. Everybody wants to come and like spend time with me. But it was always this ulterior motive behind it. And at that time, I was also on a lot of narcotics. So I was very easy to be manipulated. And I think that's why they fought so hard when I got sober and started seeing them for the toxic, dysfunctional people that they were, that then they fought like hell about it. Like, oh, now you're selfish because I started cutting off. At first it was okay, well, if they need something, I'm not going to hand the money directly to them anymore. I'm going to use that money for what they're claiming it's for. So, kind of taking that control from them by saying, okay, well, if you need tires for your car, I'm going to call up the place and I'll pay for it directly. I'm not going to hand you the money because 9 times out of 10, the money wasn't really for what they said it was, So, and of course, they didn't like that. Then it was, oh, you don't trust me. You think I'm lying. Why can't you just give the money to me type things? Because they knew that I was starting to. Call them out on it and they didn't like that. So then it was, oh, well, now you're being selfish. Now we know the real you, Jennifer. That was one that I've heard so many times. Now we know the real you. You're selfish. And a lot of it came to a head with one sibling where she wanted me to co-sign for her student loans. And I said no. And I mean, I got like paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of text messages about how I was this horrible sister, for not doing this. And that was like probably the one thing that really showed me like they don't give a fuck about me. They don't care.
No.
And not even like when I tried like committing suicide, like you would think those big moments, I would realize it then, but it really wasn't until I was just bombarded with all these text messages and just reading, so much from my mom, my sister, the other ones, just like, how could you do this? You're supposed to be helping your sister. Why are you being so selfish? Like, now we know the real you, Jennifer. Is this who you've always been type thing? And it was like, they don't care about me at
No.
all.
And they would write these things to you after you had attempted to, oh my God.
Yeah,
Well,
or
okay.
whatever I purchased, they would, or whatever I helped them with, then it was never good enough. It was like, oh, why'd you buy this car? Like, you should have got this one instead. Not being grateful for the position they put me in, that, it wasn't like I had just thousands of dollars sitting in the bank to do this stuff. I was making payments or whatever, and just nothing was, appreciated either. So,
I'm so sorry, Jen. You're such a beautiful person, and as oh, just okay, I need a minute.
yeah.
Just getting tears in my eyes. I just. You're such a beautiful person, and it just breaks my heart that you were in such a dark place that you attempted to commit suicide, and these individuals, they continued to abuse you. It just breaks my heart, and I just can't imagine how you must have felt. Because I know during my darkest times where I was not supported as I had hoped I would be by those I loved, that brought my heart into a million pieces because I felt so alone. And the fact that they would just continue to shame you, like, what the fuck? Do you not see? I literally just tried to kill myself. Now you're telling me that I'm a shitty human being. Are you aware of the impact of your words? I mean, this is expecting something that a narcissist can't give you. I know that. It's just my own frustration that I'm like articulating now. I'm just, I just feel angry on your behalf because you are so much more worth than that. I mean, what the fuck? And I'm so proud of you for starting to say no and sticking to your nose, owning your nose. And if I may mirror back to you, at one point you said, you laughed and said, I was so dumb that I did all these things. What intuitively came to me was, no, I think there was a younger part of you that was like, yay, finally, my family loves me. My siblings, they love me. My parents, they love me. They want to be with me. They want to, yeah, th things are finally changing, you know? That inner child still has so many unmet needs, and those unmet needs, they show up in the choices we choose to, you know, the choices we make as adults. So I feel like that was a younger part of you you were operating from. Yeah, because
Yeah,
you
it makes
wanted
a lot of
love.
sense.
Sorry?
I said it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because the love you were getting, it was not unconditional, it was conditional. You were fabulous. You were amazing as long as you did as they wanted. And the moment you started saying no, oh, how dare you? Who the fuck do you think you are? Shame on you, you bad, shitty human. Pooh. That's not
And then 3 days
unconditional
later would
love.
act like they never said those things too, you know? Then it was
Oh.
just like, oh, nothing. Just swept under
Yeah.
the rug and then just right back to what it was. It was just this constant cycle, you know? It would
Yeah.
unload, and then 3 days later, then it was like nothing ever happened.
No. Oh, that's classic gaslighting. I never said that. That never happened. What are you talking about? I think you're remembering things very differently. Yeah. Yeah, we know. We've been there.
Are you sure you're not on, too much medicine? Stuff like that.
No way. Seriously? Oh my goodness. Damn. I just, wow. So they really weaponized some things you were going through there.
Oh,
Wow, that
yeah,
was a
for
low
sure.
blow. No wonder you got no contact.
A lot of low blows.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I'm just thinking, would you like to share a little bit more about going into the military to actually get away from your family, or is there something else you would like to touch on?
Yeah, we can dive into that a little bit. So I know I mentioned earlier, like I joined at 17. I joined the army and I was just like, okay, well, this is my way to get away from that toxicity. And look, I can handle being screamed at and not reacting. So military should be, piece of cake for me. So that's what I thought. I was like, yeah, it'll be fine, And I mean, I did decent, I wasn't like, I don't know, like this person who scored like 100% on their PT test all the time. It was like I did what I had to do to make it. But it wasn't really until, of course, I was 17 years old too. And so it was the National Guard. So I was able to go to college my freshman year, but I would do weekend drills with the National Guard. And So I got away from, the control, my family, and here I go, like straight into college, partying, drinking. I had all this freedom, nobody telling me what to wear, what music to listen to. I just kind of went a little crazy, of course. Just drinking a lot. Just not really knowing, like, one, who was I? I had no clue, so I was just trying to figure that out as well, and just thinking like, oh, thank God I'm just not home dealing with them. And of course, then I went into a lot of relationships that weren't healthy, because it was like any guy gave me attention, I would fall head over heels, in love with everybody, thinking, oh my God, somebody's giving me attention. They love me. Not used to any of that stuff, because we didn't get it growing up. So that just landed me with a bunch of people that were not healthy. But then when my first day of sophomore year in college, we got orders that we were being called active duty to serve in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And we were going to Iraq for a year to a year and a half. And our unit was tasked with convoy security. So we were gun support for our civilian and military contractors. So like the big military vehicles that you would see with like a gunner in a turret with a machine gun. And, I'm sure a lot of people have seen like Black Hawk Down, movies like that, where they're like going through a town. And that's essentially what we were doing, being gun support. So we were like security for civilian and military contractors, and we were exposed to like roadside bombs, being shot at, rocket-propelled grenades, live rounds coming into base constantly. It was a lot at 20 years old, to be being exposed to.
I mean, coming from a home that was that dysfunctional, that in itself, in my opinion, is a war zone. So you literally went from one war zone to another. I know something beautiful came out of it because that's where you met your husband. Right, yeah. So that's a positive side of it, but my God, I mean, the things that you experienced there, being shot at, bombs exploding, and there was also harassment, right? That
Yes,
also
so
severely
much of
impacted you.
it. They don't tell you when you're joining the military as a female, like, hey, you better have thick skin, because if you're gonna be constantly harassed, even over in Iraq, being a female. So on the base that we were stationed on, it was like 25,000 people on that base, but only 4,000 were women. So the odds were like, it was so bad that you as a female could not go to the restroom without somebody with you, couldn't go to the tents to take showers by yourself, couldn't, just go anywhere by yourself, because the threat of you being raped was so prevalent there, and it happened all the time. And you would think, here I am in a third world country, being directly involved in combat situations, and I have to worry about the guy next to me more than being blown up, basically.
I mean, I can't even I can't even comprehend that. Like being more afraid of being sexually abused and being blown up, like what? I would never have thought of that's what your concern is. Once you go into military, I would think that it would be, I'm so afraid of being shot or being bombed, not of being raped. So
And I
that.
really didn't recognize a lot of that for a long time, because I think I just had this persona of I like to say like my bitch face. Like I would just be so like to the point to where people would be afraid to kind of talk to me because I had this look of like, don't mess with me. It was like I had to, wear that like armor so they knew not to like fuck with me as much. So I definitely see it as if I had been not like that, there would have been a lot more instances where something would have happened for sure. But it was like this armor in a way that I had to like wear to wear. Well, and also the fact that because of the missions I was doing, like obviously I'm in a vehicle with three other guys, but most of them I also kind of trusted in a way. Like I still had to kind of like, it's so hard to explain. It would be more like maybe people who didn't interact with me on a day-to-day basis, but like we had to take a small bus to like go to the chow hall to eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. There was like a convenience store on base. So when I would like get on the bus to go sit down, I mean, you were looked at like a piece of meat. Like the men were like salivating, like, oh my God, there's like a female and just looks in the comments. And it was just all the time. And that was just the way it is type thing. I mean, you just accepted, like, okay, you just have to have a thick skin. Like that's just the way it is. Because if you said anything about it, then it was like, oh, like, come on now, don't be so sensitive, the gaslighting or whatever. So you better have like a reason to go and report it in a way. Like you better have something significant type thing. And it wasn't just the men. I mean, you got it from the same sex too. So
So
I don't
you
know what
really
it was over there, but it was like everybody was going nuts in a way. I mean, everybody was having affairs. Like it was, maybe it's just how everybody was coping with being over there. I don't know. But I mean, it was like constant, just everywhere.
Yeah, that was my thought too. Maybe it was a way to survive the brutality, the reality you all were in. You know, we cope in different unexpected, mostly really unhealthy ways. But I'm just thinking of your entire story. So having that childhood, going into military, there was constant eyes on you. Both in your childhood, being criticized, bullied, all of that. And then the harassment continued in military. So you've just been under constant pressure, constant stress. It's no wonder that, you know, it all culminated once you got out of military, came back home. Do you want to explain the point of, I want to call it the point of no return. So when it became really dark and you had your moment, you had, and the moment you had the realization, I need to change my life. Like when was that?
It was kind of like kind of two things happened at once within a couple of months, but I had attempted to overdose on oxycodone and Valium by just taking every pill that I had left. And of course, my husband called, the cops, called 911. They rushed me to the hospital, and then afterwards I had to go to the psychiatric hospital, but this was also my second visit at that time. So it's like you kind of knew the drill type way. You'd already been through it before. So you're like, okay, well, this is just the way it is. And I remember like when I waiting for the cops to get there, like I was packing my bags like for clothes and stuff because I knew I'd be going to the psych type thing. It was like, oh, I know the drill, so I better make sure I got stuff this time, to be like more planned for it. And here I did, just took like 200 pills or whatever, and the cop's there and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, Obviously, I'm not dead, so I'm gonna have to go to the psych ward, and I'm packing my bags and making sure I have comfy clothes this time, shit like that. And they were like, okay, like whatever.
Yeah.
So I go to the psych ward, was there for a couple of weeks, and when I got out, it was like I came to this thing of, okay, well, I want to find my real dad and meet him. Maybe this will be like a piece to the puzzle. Maybe there'll finally be a parent that loves me for me type thing. So it was like, I'm going to find him and find out, who he is, whatever. So I found him on Facebook, surprisingly, and I was 27 at this time. And I reached out to him and I went to go meet him. And of course, he had two kids, been remarried since I was like really, really young to the same person. And I go to meet him thinking, okay, this is going to be the time where I finally have like a parent that genuinely loves me for me. And I wouldn't want to say like it was. The first couple of visits and hanging out with him, it was finally like some validation of, okay, well, this is why I'm not like my stepdad. Like, it was like obvious that, okay, obviously we're related because we had the same type of humor, just very sarcastic, that no bullshit type, nobody fucks with me type mentality. I was like, that's where it is. He loves animals. So it was like, okay, that's where I got my animal thing from. But there was no like genuine relationship with it because he is the same narcissist as my stepdad. He's just funnier in a way, So, but he's just very self-centered. It's all about him. I mean, he never once like really asked about what my childhood was like. Never like, I mean, I would be on phone with him for hours and never even ask once, like, how are you or what's going on with you? It was just always about him. So I saw that very quickly. Plus, shit, damn, earbuds came. Plus, he is also an addict, was at that time was on fentanyl, which I was on fentanyl at that time too. He was on like Suboxone, methadone, oxys, all that kind of stuff. So it was like a mirror seeing, well, this is the path I'm going down. Like, this is where I'm going to end up if I don't attempt to kill myself and actually be successful, or this is my life. Like, I'm just going to be an addict the rest of my life. And I did not want to be him, just like I didn't want to be like my mom and my stepdad. It was like, I don't want to be like him either. So it was like, I've got to change. Something's got to give. And so it was just kind of a combination of those two events. And they happened like within maybe 4 or 5 months of each other. So it just kind of further showed like, I have to do something. Something's got to change. And that's when I decided, you know what? I'm getting off of all this shit. I'm not going to be on this anymore. This is not serving me in any way. One, it's just an easy access. For me to just use this as an excuse to kill myself because taking pills is easy, It's like I'm gonna do that again. And so yeah, it was like also kind of like a thing of I'm gonna prove to y'all I can do it because y'all haven't been able to be sober. Nobody else has done it. And I think it was like more of a drive of just like a fuck you to them. Like, I'm gonna prove y'all wrong. Like, I'm not going to end up like you. So I said, for me, for this to work, I need to do this slowly and taper. Because if a doctor had come up to me and been like, okay, we're taking you off this or you're on too much, I would have fought him like hell. It had to be my decision of this is what I want to do and this is what's going to work for me. And it was just kind of like, I knew it. Now I just need to know like how to do it and do it safely. And at that time, I was on fentanyl, oxycodone, Valium, plus like 20 other antidepressants. So many of them were not even supposed to be taken together. Like, it's a no wonder I was still like functioning, but I think that was like another part of why no doctor probably said anything to me is because I was like a high functioning addict. I held a job, my bills were paid, I wasn't like nodding out. I was like, nobody knew I was on that amount of medication because I was able to just survive, but I was also like just a functioning like zombie. Like, was I there as a person? No, not really. And my emotions were always all over the place, of course. And I think that's why like I would drastically be like, okay, I'm gonna end my life over something so ridiculously stupid. And like with my second attempt, the thing that like set me over was because my husband said I was acting crazy. And I was like, I'm gonna show you crazy. And so I like took all my pills. Like that was, it wasn't like, okay, this is my planned way how I want to go out. It was just like, I'm going to show you. But I didn't care that it did, would in my life. It was like that logic was not there, obviously. So it was just things like that that I knew were just too easily accessible. And so I started like calling doctors saying, okay, I want to get off. Well, first of all, the doctor that had prescribed me that stuff would not even try to taper me off. She was like, no, you're going to have to be on this pain medicine the rest of your life. Like, you can't not go off of it. So it was like, I didn't have one doctor who was like willing to kind of work with me. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to see you anymore. So I need to find somebody who will see me. But then no doctor would see me because of the amount of medication I was on. They're like, no, you need to go to a detox clinic. You need to do methadone or Suboxone. Like, you can't not do it this way. And I was like, I don't want to do that because that's exactly what my biological dad's on. He's doing Suboxone and methadone, and it's just substituting it for the other. To me, that's, I have no ill will towards people that use this to get off of narcotics. I just knew for me, it would just be supplementing another addiction for something else. And I didn't want to be dependent on narcotics anymore. So I like called 9 or 10 doctors, and like none of them would take me. And it was like, all right, well, I'm going to go back to the VA and see if I can find one there. And thank God I had one that was willing to just. I said, I don't want you telling me like this is what I need to do. Or you know what I'm saying? It was like, let me set the pace. You just make sure I'm doing it safely, that I'm not doing it too fast, anything like that. Because I'm not obviously trying to die by doing it too fast, because it is very, you can't just stop taking narcotics. It has to definitely be overseen by somebody. And, but yeah, it started like a 5 year tapering journey, basically, of getting off of one at a time. But during that time when I started, I also knew I needed to change my environment completely. I couldn't stay at the same job where it was everybody was using. It was just so readily available. I was like, I've got to get out of all this. And then, I think just because I had so much trauma stored up too, everything was coming, manifesting in these physical symptoms, which doctors were just treating with narcotics, And now being almost 9 years sober, it's like those days I couldn't even get out of bed because the pain was so excruciating, But I didn't know at that time, it was just constant withdrawal. I was just withdrawing after withdrawing after withdrawing. And so now the fact that I'm able to do all the things that at that time, doctors were telling me I would never be able to do. It was all because I was on all those narcotics was the reason why I couldn't do that stuff, But I did just like a 5 year journey of tapering off one at a time, quitting my job. We sold our house. I, started distancing myself. That's when I like the financial boundaries started being placed. I just kind of like did it all at one time. It was like I had to completely shift everything for this to work, And I knew like being around my family all the time, I would not be able to continue being sober. So we bought a farm, and it just kind of gave this space for me to heal and started rescuing animals. And I always say like my animals really saved me because one, just rescuing animals who have their own trauma stories, and then being able to see, like my donkeys, Annie and Rocky, when we got them, they were terrified of humans, had never had one person treat them with any kind of decency, were terrified of them. And now they'll like lay in my lap, greet me at the gate every time, you know. So being able to see them transform, saying, okay, well, if they can do this, like I can do this. And it just kind of kept motivating me to just keep tapering, having, you know, animals to care for gave me purpose again. It was like something to look forward to every day. And, you know, it's just hard because, like, no one, obviously, my husband means the world to me. We've been together 19 years now, but it was like the animals are really what kept me motivated to continue. And I hate saying that because I love them to death, but the animals just had me, you know, they just got me to really just stay focused and motivated to do it, to be like, okay, this is what I needed to get away from my family, start setting boundaries. And, you know, and then as I was getting sober, it was like a veil was lifted. It was like now I could really see them for who they are. And there was no going back after that point. You know, there was no like going back on medicine and putting that blocker back on. I didn't want to go backwards, you know. So it's like you kind of hit that point where you're like, you do it. It sucks, but you got to do more than survive. You're tired of surviving.
That's a part of
Sorry,
your
that's
story that really inspires me. I'm just reading the amount of medication you're on. As I told Jen before we started recording, I'm a nurse and I was a nurse in psychiatry. And so I have an understanding of the different types of medication. And while I was working as a nurse, part of my job would also be like helping patients taper out of alcoholism, all different kinds of addictions. So my jaw, it dropped. I read the amount of medication you were on, and the fact that you embarked on this journey all by yourself. If this is not done correctly, you can die. If you do it too fast, you can die of this. People are usually put into or go into rehabilitation centers where they get support because it's so important that this is done properly so you don't do harm to yourself. So the fact that you managed to do this all by yourself, I know you laughed and said, yeah, but it also took me like 5 years. Who cares? You did this all by yourself. And it was after meeting your father, and it seems like there was a light bulb moment where you were like, okay, I can kill myself or I can become like my dad. And then it sounded like there was something in you that was like, nope, you know what? I'm gonna say fuck all of them and I'm gonna show them that I can do better. And if that isn't badass and inspiring, I don't know what it is. That is so incredibly inspiring. And the fact that you managed to like point on all the things that were no longer serving you, the job, the toxicity in your family and moving away from that and finding this farm, rescuing these animals and building this beautiful, amazing life with your husband. It's incredible. It's incredible. I
Thank
mean,
you.
what a journey. It requires so much strength, what you did. Not really. Seeing so many patients while I was working as a nurse who was in all different kinds of addictions, what you did, Jen, is it's not easy. I've seen what this can do to people. And you managed to find your way out of this all by yourself. I'm so proud of you, and I hope that you're proud of yourself. You're incredible. I'm so proud of you, really. And I hope you're proud of yourself too. I mean, you are
Thank you.
a beacon of hope to so many people who go through addiction and they're stuck in these vicious cycles for years and don't know how to get out of it. You are the living example. It's possible. And that's why I think your
Thank you.
story is so incredible. Proud of you, friend.
Thank you.
You're
I think,
welcome.
it's hard because you would think things like that you would hear from your family of like how proud they are of you doing something like that, like getting sober, doing something that you couldn't do. And instead, I was told, like, oh, it's okay if you relapse. Like, you're probably not going to make it anyways. Like, you're going to regret that, and like sharing to my real dad, like, when my first year of sobriety, I shared, I was like, oh, I just hit 1 year. And he was just like, oh, call me when you hit two. It was just like never hearing those things. So I think it's very hard for me when I share that to think it is something big that I did. I don't know.
It is, Jen. It is massive. Trust me, I'm all about authenticity. I'm a very, ask people who know me very well. Jazz is like all about honesty and a very direct person. It is massive what you did. And the fact that you did this all by yourself, that is unfucking believable. That's why you inspire the shit out of me. That's literally why you inspire me. Because you managed to break through all of that, which takes immense strength. And I didn't even know this part that you just told me now, that your family would be like, oh, you're going to relapse. Just so not only were you going through that journey, you also was not getting support. You are actually hearing from people that you're not going to make it. And even still, you smashed it. You gave them the big double middle fingers and proved them wrong. Yeah, and
I think they just
I
peeled
have my
me.
middle fingers up right now. Do you want to join me? Yes, let's do it together. Yes, let's send them so many fucks. All the people that did not believe in you, let's send them fucks. Fuck them. Fuck you. And high five because you made it. You did it, Jen. I mean, look at you now. You're radiant. You have a beautiful heart. I'm part of Jen's community. Or is it adult children that grew up in narcissistic families? And you're helping people that have grown up in narcissistic families. You're making a difference for others. You are a cycle breaker. You managed to do what no one in your family has done. You did it. You are the change in your family. And I just hope that you're proud of yourself. I see you when I say these things, you're like,
Like,
really?
know.
You're not really buying it, and that's okay. That's okay. I'm gonna keep reminding you. Like you remind me, that's what friends are for. Like you remind me how far I've come and that you see me as an example that healing is possible. Likewise, babe, as here's the mirror. Look at yourself, say it to
Both of
yourself. You know?
us.
Yeah, we're both examples that it's possible.
It's so
And
much easier to say that about other
it
people
is.
than it is to
It
say it to
is.
ourselves.
But I
Or
just
to even be able to say it and really, like, really mean it. Like, of course, I'll
Yeah.
be like, yeah, I'm proud of myself or whatever, but it's never like this.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah,
But I just
Not yet.
wish that you could see yourself as I see you. I wish that you could look at yourself, go in front of the mirror and really look at yourself in your eyes and be like, I am fucking phenomenal. I did that. I did that. I am such a badass and I'm gonna own it. That's okay. It's okay that we speak to ourselves in that way. It's okay. You know, I think a part of us can be like, who the hell am I to think that I'm phenomenal? Who am I to say these things to myself? It's important that we
Yeah.
do because we were, our self-worth was chipped away. We were constantly criticized, dehumanized. It's so important that we rebuild ourselves by speaking to ourselves to rebuild
Yeah.
that self-esteem.
Yeah.
And please know, I'm not just saying this to boost your self-esteem. It's really from my heart, these words. I mean it. Really, I just wish that you could start saying these things to yourself because you really deserve to know how phenomenal you are. I mean, you inspire me every day. And I will continue to go onto your page when I lose hope to remind myself, Jen did it, so can Jazz.
Yes,
You
and you
know.
can.
Thank you.
I think it's all just more of either you're doing it, maybe it's your intuition, or maybe it's like an inner spite. For me, it was like something like, I'm going to prove them wrong. And that's, I think, just what kept fueling me. Like,
Yeah.
and you know, even though you're like kind of doing it for this other reason of like, okay, this is going to prove to them that I can do it, and like you're going to get that recognition for it. Even if they gave it to me, would it be genuine? No.
Yeah, no,
You know?
no,
So it was
no.
like I was wanting this thing that would never be something genuine, like you just said to me. You know, I will never get that from them. And it's such like a hard truth, you know,
Yeah.
like you're never gonna get that. But would I
Yeah.
want it from them anyways?
Exactly.
No, because I knew it's not real.
Exactly. And another thing, they don't benefit from you being this healed, empowered version. They benefited from you being wounded and operating from
Yeah.
those wounds.
Yeah.
So you have stepped into a new role that's no longer going to serve them.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of them, a big reason why they would never acknowledge how far you have come and how amazing it is what you have done and what you're doing now.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, as a fellow survivor, as a woman who has walked through the fire, as someone that is, I just want to say I see you. I'm getting
Thank you.
emotional, but I see you and your strength brings tears to my eyes, and I think it's just badass that you are like, I'm going to prove you wrong. I mean, hello, you should be. I've said this to Jen many times, and I'm not saying it to pressure you, but my wish for you one day is that you are on a stage and that you like TED Talk or whatever, public speaking,
Oh
that
my
you
gosh.
share your story and this, and especially this part of no return. Because so many people will become inspired and they're also going to want to say what you said. I'm going to prove you wrong. And then they're going to go out and kick ass because you shared your story, because you voiced your story with the world. I just feel it. I see it. No pressure. No pressure. But if you ever would consider
Maybe if I
it,
can bring a donkey with me or something
yes, we're
at
going to bring the
first.
donkeys. I will be there. I would have like a big sign and I would be like, go, Jen, go, Jen, go, Jen, go, Jen, go, Jen, go. I would just be there cheering you on with my pom-poms and I'll be your cheerleader. I'll be your hype woman. I'll be like, bitch, you got this. They ain't got nothing on you. You slay queen. I would be there to hype you the fuck up.
Now
Yeah.
that would be a good time.
It would. Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for this gorgeous conversation. Whew.
Thank you.
You're
Thank you for just
welcome.
giving me a safe space to share all of that. A lot
You're
that I just
welcome.
haven't really talked
You're
about with a lot of
welcome.
people. So that just shows someone like you that I can trust. And
Oh, thank you.
so thank you.
You're so welcome, and thank you for trusting me and being in this space with me. I have one last question. So, if someone is listening right now, another survivor, and they are in it, they are deep in the mud, what would you like to say to this person?
Keep going. Don't let them win.
Yeah, keep
Put a
going.
middle finger in the air. Don't let them win.
Yeah. Beautiful. Jen, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. I am so grateful that we found one another, and I feel blessed to have met you. You are a blessing, and just thank you. Mean it.
No, I can tell.
Yeah.
I hope you know I feel the same way about you.
That was it for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate Alchemical Voices and follow the community on Instagram. Until next time.